Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. And gosh, we need so much healing right now. This is such a great topic. I'm always happy to bring you guys a wide range of healing of topics on healing. And today we have a beautiful guest today, Heather Grish. She's the author of The Ayurvedic Guide to Fertility, and she is a certified Ayurvedic practitioner. And Ayurveda, if you don't know anything about it, is super interesting because it really bridges the science with these other ways of looking at ourselves, the ways of energy and alternative medicine. And Ayurveda is very popular in India, but it's really helpful for helping people heal their emotional and physical lives. And I actually didn't know that it could be used to work with fertility. So I'm really, and I think fertility is a problem we're going to be having more and more in the world as we go by. So I'm super excited to discuss this. So welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
Sure. Yeah. So let's just, for people that may not be familiar with Ayurveda, can you just give us a little bit of a thumbnail on what it's all about?
Yeah, totally. So Ayurveda is a Sanskrit word, which it's an old language from India, and it means the science of life or the knowledge of life. And what it, the way it sort of evolved in India is it's a system of medicine there where there are hundreds of thousands of people who practice this kind of medicine as professionals there. And so it's a really deep, long 5,000 year fabric of the history of India.
Wow.
Yeah. And they have other indigenous medicines as well. This is one of them. This is the biggest one. Mm. And so what started to happen when all the hippies went over to India, probably, it brought yoga over. They discovered this thing called Ayurveda, brought this over, and we're gradually learning about it in our culture, much sort of like how you have Chinese medicine that came from China and that turned into acupuncture, what everybody knows it for. This is the indigenous medicine from India that will start to take hold in the US more in the coming years. And so what it is, though, is because it's so old, it's not, you don't go and use lots of medical devices and all this kinds of stuff to learn how your health is doing. There's a very basic, I think, quite lost way of looking at health, meaning that I think as society has gotten more and more complex and technology has gotten stronger and stronger, that there are these sort of inherent sensory processing and intuitions that humans have had for that get lost along with that. And actually Ayurveda sort of grew at the time that, civilizations were being formed and enhanced and all these things. So it makes sense that it would happen together. But particularly what's happening now in the US is we have about, because I'm on the board of the National Ayurvedic Medical Association, we have about, say, 1,000 to 2,000 people that are probably practicing in the US.
Wow.
Which, a lot less than, say, acupuncturists or chiropractors or something like that.
It's kind of gaining in popularity. It's gaining in recognition. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you mentioned you didn't know that it could be applied to fertility, but in India, there are 8 branches of medicine. And, one of them is geriatrics, for example. One of them is the care of the mother and the baby. One of them is kind of like ear, nose, and throat. So there's 8 different branches, kind of like how you have branches of medicine in any medical system, like we have in the United States,
right,
where I live. So there is specialization. And I think Ayurveda does a really amazing job with fertility because, in general, in medicine, the soul is missing.
Right.
Okay. Where we are at, because I used to work in the mainstream health industry before I became an Ayurvedic practitioner. I actually led product development for a health insurance company. So I really know how that system works, that mainstream system. the soul is missing. And everything is so problem, solution focused that I think the benefit of something like Ayurveda, we talk about the soul, we talk about the spirit. And in fact, we you could say it's primitive. You could say it's, you know, modern science has the periodic table of elements, which has dozens of elements on it. And your element system in Ayurveda only has 5 elements. Okay, but the thing that's so beautiful about Ayurveda is I think it really helps people clue into the intangibles that are going around them. The things, perhaps energy, if you want to call it energy, but the unseen forces that are behind matter, that are behind movement. And that's a huge deal with fertility. That is an absolute huge deal.
Huge deal.
Yeah.
Huge deal. And it seems to me like so different from the way mainstream Western medicine deals with fertility, which is to give you like super harsh, you know, drugs and hormones that interrupt your normal fertility cycle and do surgery and, you know, really jam you up to do IVF. And IVF is so, I mean, I didn't have to go through that. And I really feel, really, really feel deep compassion for women that had to go through that to achieve their dream of having a child, you know, because I feel like, you know, and as an energy healer, I've worked on people who've come on the other side of IVF and they might have a baby, but their health is like wrecked. Mm-hmm. You know, they have PTSD. They have like, it can be a terrible experience for some people. And it just seems like so harsh compared to maybe the, what I'm imagining the processes with Ayurveda.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, my book is Ayurvedic Guide to Fertility, a Natural Approach to Getting Pregnant. And a lot of people say, well, if somebody is going through IVF, could they use this book? And I certainly have worked with women going through IVF. What is most important when a woman wants to become a mother or wants to create a body that is fertile for that possibility to happen? It's really about making sure that the body is healthy and that the reproductive channel is open, receptive, resilient, strong, non-reactive. So there, any health issue that a woman has, whether it's in her reproductive tract specifically or in her overall body, which is going to affect her reproductive functioning, then all that stuff matters. And so that's why when we look at fertility, we're really looking at the overall health of the person in the environment that she's in to make sure that that channel is open. Because, you know, I love this in Ayurveda, the uterus for the woman, the word for that in Sanskrit is kshetra, which means the place where a person will make a pilgrimage to.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think everybody can relate to that because you made that pilgrimage and I made that pilgrimage. We're here. So we came through that,
right? You
know, that channel. And so it's really about making sure that the channel is healthy. And yes, energy is involved, but it's also making sure that the structures that hold the energy are sound, have good integrity and things like that. So we do work a lot with dietary changes, herbal changes and things like that. And you mentioned about how modern medicine uses, you know, these really strong pharmaceuticals. And I really love using herbs and diet because it's like, you know, when a person comes to you and they have a problem and you could just solve it for them. You could just be like, yeah, I'm going to solve it and make it go away. But there's no learning that takes place for that person. They can't figure out what they did to get to that point that to cause that problem.
Right.
And I think what the things that are not so strong, medicines that are not so strong, not to say that they're not effective, but ones that don't sort of arrest you and take you over, the ones that are not so strong can motivate you and empower you to heal yourself more.
Hmm. So it's sort of like creating a strong constitution, you know? And when we have, when our, the constitution is strong, and I mean like the wholeness of our being, physically, emotionally, energetically, it's probably going to be naturally fertile, I'm assuming.
That's the point, exactly. So when you are living in line with nature, your constitution, the way that the egg and the sperm combined when you were conceived and created that unique code that is you, and in that perfect environment that was perfect for you at that time to exist, you wouldn't have existed if that environment wasn't exactly like that, the way it was.
Right.
And then you basically are... in line with that nature, or you're out of line with that nature, and everything in your environment is affecting you, whether it's your diet and the choices that you're making, whether it's the people that you're around and how they're affecting you, whether it's the air and what's going on in the air around you, mm-hmm. what's going on in your work environment. So it's everything is sort of converging for a woman, because we're talking about fertility. The man has to be healthy as well, but specifically the book focuses more on the woman's health. If she is healthy and her body is functioning properly, if all of her tissues have been formed properly, if her metabolism's working well, if all those things are happening, then fertility happens.
Right.
It happens. Now, there are exceptions. If you're born with some sort of congenital issue, there are challenges that certainly happen. Or if you had some sort of past trauma, things like that, that cause scarring or things that make channels difficult to less flexible and difficult to penetrate sometimes or function properly. But there's a fair amount that can be done to heal these things. And that's what Ayurveda works on, is creating this overall health so that fertility emerges. And actually, a lot of people who've read my book have not been women who want to get pregnant, because that's a certain group of women. And I'm aging out of that now, partially by age and partially by choice. But, it's like this, just because you're fertile doesn't mean you want to get pregnant. This should actually be a goal of yours to be fertile, because that means you're healthy.
Right. And I think we can channel that fertility into other things besides babies. We have businesses, we write books, we create, we are creative forces. Women can create a baby, but it's also got other things they could do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because creative energy is universal energy. And what is it going toward creating?
Yeah, I love it. Now in Ayurveda, there's three of these constitutions, right? We call them the doshas. And can you tell us just a little bit about what the doshas are and how they connect with our fertility?
Yeah. So the constitution is different than the dosha. That's actually a common thing that people teach in the US. The constitution can have doshas that are out of balance. The constitution does have doshas. We all have doshas, but so your body will have doshas in it, and you want them in the right amounts. So there's vata, pitta, and kapha. And if vata, which I'll explain a little bit about each of them, but you want them in the right amount for you. You don't want them too high or too low.
Right.
And then we all have sort of tendencies, I would say, to have certain ones go out of balance more than others. That's kind of the deal. Although it can change if you move from one environment or climate to a different one. So they really can change. But vata is the first one. And this is the air and the space element. So ether or space and air. So vata is really super intangible. And vata people who have high vata in their body, they might notice a lot of signs of degeneration, actually. Vata, when you're later in your years of life, vata increases a lot. The skin gets thin, the oils get stripped from the body, the cells start to, not rejuvenate as easily and things like that. The body gets less moist and unctuous, as we say. So if you have that going on when you're 25 or 30 or 40, and you have high amounts of that, you have super dry skin, tons of vaginal dryness, you're losing tons of weight, you're constantly dehydrated, you're having anxiety, because vata is also movement. So vata means that which moves. And so people who have a lot of mobility in their life, travel, super busy, where their attention is dispersed in so many different directions, that is an example of vata energy. It's not concentrated. It's very dispersed and broad.
Right.
And it moves a lot. And so that type of energy, when there's too much of it, there's a whole host of diseases in Ayurveda that actually are caused by too much of that kind of energy. So for example, any degenerative condition, including brain degeneration, any degeneration, basically. And the early stages, you would see something like anxiety, something like that, or shaking, tremory kind of thing, spasming. That's all energy moving in the body. That's excesses, or like peristalsis, where the digestive tract, you know, squeezes and moves a lot, and you start to feel crampy and things like that, or gas, lots of gas in the body, think bloating, things like that. That's all vata moving through the body or trapped in the body. So that's the first type. And vata people get a reputation for being very creative, because they're the ones that can't sit still. They're like in the back of the class, and there's all this energy moving inside, and it wants to move, and they're dancers, and there's all kinds of things that come with vata energy. Now, the second category, I would say, the doshas is pitta. And that's the fire and water elements. And pitta literally means that which cooks. So pitta energy is like lava. It is warm, and it penetrates, and it flows, and it's sharp and concentrated. But if there's too much of it, it will burn you. It will burn everything around it, and it will cause inflammation. So all the inflammatory conditions in the body are associated with pitta. Anything red, any red skin condition, or even like being mad, like really tons of anger is pitta. Right. You know, yeah. And that will go up in the summer.
Right.
When it's hot and humid, depending on where you're in Boston, right? So yep. It's hot and humid there, everybody. That's why, you know, when people start getting like irritable in the spring, I'm like, uh-oh, it's going to be a rough summer. It's not even hot yet, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So pitta is penetrating, warming, but in large amounts, it will burn and destroy. And the last one is kapha. And kapha is the water and the earth elements. And kapha are the people have high kapha, the ones you want to hug. They're typically more calming energy, and their bodies tend to be more dense and maybe even more wet. So because they're earth energy and water energy, so they may have a lot of mucus. I always think of my sister when I think of kapha, because when she was a child, she would sneeze and just spray everywhere. And she had a lot of mucus in her sinus. That's an example of kapha. But also, when a person has too much kapha, they can develop tumors, cysts. So kapha energy grows things. And kapha bodies will build very easily. That's there. You know, you can give three different people with different constitutions the same food, and each of their bodies will do something different with it and turn it into something else. So the kapha energy, you know, thick hair, thick skin, everything's thick and strong. And whether it's, you know, we tend to get, our bodies will build easily, whether it's fat or muscle, you know, but we're starved, like really strong teeth. Very strong, robust constitutional types. But when that kapha energy gets out of balance, then you get the things that start to clog and block, like cysts, tumors, like skin tags, things like that, which show up as a kapha energy, or also trapping energy in the body. You know, that whole like fight, flight, and freeze.
Yeah.
No, fight or flight, but freeze is the third one, I think, that came in more recent years. That would be the freeze. Kapha is the freeze, because the energy gets stuck in the body. And actually, that can actually give a lot of people the sense of there being a lot of vata moving through, because the energy is stuck. But it's really that you have a dense body that's trapped the energy inside.
Right. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I feel that when I do energy work on people, that some people have that sort of dense, you know, energy where like their the energy just doesn't want to move through them. And other people have like, you can really flow energy through them quite easily. And so it, if you have fertility issues, is it a matter of balancing these forces inside one person or figuring out which one is yours and trying to live more from there? Like how does that part work?
Yeah. So there, I would say multiple things. So one is figuring out your specific type of imbalance. And that's going to be a convergence of your constitution, the foods you eat, your sleep patterns, your work patterns, the way you exercise, you know, what climate you live in, what season it is, all these things. So that's going to happen. You want to figure out essentially the little tweaks you have to make seasonally, the little tweaks you need to make just in your diet to clear out the dosha that is out of balance, to get it back to the appropriate level so that it's not too high or too low. And then there's this other piece in Ayurveda, which I think is a big factor in fertility. You know, metabolism is a huge factor in fertility. We know that people that have PCOS, for example, which is correlated with metabolic syndrome and obesity, not to say that everybody who has PCOS ends up obese or having that, but there's a huge correlation between metabolic issues and fertility issues. Let's just say that. And if your metabolism, the way we talk about it in Ayurveda, your metabolism, or we call it the Agni, which was the fire god from the Vedic tradition. So Agni, which is that fire that cooks your food, that allows you to turn it into your cells and transmute it. So your Agni can either be very sharp, where you are like starving, and if you don't eat, you'll get an ulcer because it'll burn the lining of your gut.
Wow.
Or your Agni can be super like dull or slow, where you don't really have really strong enzymes. And so if you eat, whatever you eat, it's not going to process well because you don't have the juice essentially and the power to process and cook what you cook in. And it also depends on what you ate, because certain foods will dampen the Agni more than others, and certain food temperatures and things like that. So it's really about making sure that the Agni is balanced and that you're eating appropriately for your Agni. And knowing how you influence your Agni. Really like about your passion. It's about your, you know, and when I say passion, I don't mean, oh, what I want to do with my life when I grow up kind of passion. I mean like that visceral kind of passion.
Right. The life force energy.
Yeah. And it's warm. It's a warm energy. And you know, because I'm also some of the stuff that I do with people is fasting. That's what I wrote my master's thesis on. And I do talk about that a little bit in the book, but when you get in touch with your real hunger, because most of us, we have access to, most of your listeners, I'm going to assume, have access to great food,
right?
Regular meals. We have a world of plenty, you know, where we're not fighting for our lives to get food. If you've ever fasted, you can feel that urge come up. That is that primal hunger. And it's different than like, oh, I really want to that chocolate.
I'm feeling kind of bored and lonely, so I might just eat something.
Exactly.
You know, I so sad. I want to keep talking. We're just about out of time, and I want to give people a chance to find you. I hope that you write your next book on menopause.
Oh, yeah.
Please do that. Please write about the Ayurvedic way of handling that, because that's, you know, would help a whole other set of women.
It would.
I'm sure it would work just as well.
Yeah, any transition. I think Ayurveda is just so great with life transitions in general.
That's great. So how can people find your work, Heather? How can they get a hold of you and find your book?
Yeah. So my website is heathergrish.com. I think you'll be showing that in the show notes. And my last name is spelled GRZYCH. So heathergrish.com. You can find me on Instagram at heathergrish. My book, The Ayurvedic Guide to Fertility, is available. You can read about it on my website, or you can go directly to something like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Bookshop to buy the book, if that is what you're interested in. I'd be offering some programs related to the four fertility factors, which I write about in the book, the four fertility factors of Ayurveda, to help people understand the mechanisms behind fertility and creativity.
Great. And that's something they can get on your website?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Heather, thank you so much for being with us today. Wish you had a whole other hour to talk because it's such a fascinating topic. I've always loved it, love the concept of Ayurveda. So I appreciate you and the work that you're doing. And I hope that you, everybody goes out and gets your book. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for allowing me to come share this message. And thank you for the great work you're doing.
Oh, thank you. And thanks all of you guys here who are watching and listening. To us here on the Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time, right here on Empower Radio.